Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The farm worker strikes in California in the 1960s were pivotal strikes in labor history, but one key group rarely appears in the history books, Filipino Americans. Larry Itliong, a Filipino who traveled to the United States at age 15, worked up and down the West Coast harvesting fruits and vegetables. In Delano, California, the growers were not paid, the growers did not give the workers a fair wage, so Larry and the workers voted to go on strike. Larry reached out to Cesar Chavez and asked him and Mexican-American workers to join the strike. And they helped launch the Great Delano Grape Strike. Their combined efforts led to the formation of the United Farm Workers. But when people talk about the UFW, and it gets a lot of attention, they rarely mention Larry Itliong. Filipino Americans are the second largest Asian American group in the country, but they're often left out of history books. Well, to change that, historians and writers are publishing a series of four illustrated children's books about Filipino American historical figures. And the first book in the series is Journey for Justice. It is about Larry Itliong, the first ever book written about him. And joining us today is Gail Ramasanta, a Filipino American writer and editor, author of the bilingual English and Tagalog children's book Beautiful Eyes, and co-author of Journey for Justice, The Life of Larry Itliong. Gail grew up in Stockton, California, known to many as Little Manila, and she is the descendant of farm workers. Hi, Gail. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Well, thank you so much. I loved reading the book. I mean, it's beautifully written and beautifully illustrated. And I have to say, we've done so many shows about the UFW, and I don't remember talking about Larry Itliong.
You know what? Many people, including Filipino Americans, don't know about this history at all. So you are actually, you know, the whole country.
Well, thank you for bringing it out and for teaching us about this. I was also very surprised to learn that this is actually the first book about Larry Itliong.
It is. And you know what? All of this research that is in Journey for Justice, The Life of Larry Itliong, is, you know, was completely vetted and completely researched. It's probably one of the very better researched children's book by Dr. Don Mabalon, my co-writer and the researcher behind the book. And she went to the UFW archives and, found all of this information about Larry, all the transcripts, meeting notes, documentation, all of the public records. She actually wove his history together along with oral histories.
And talk about, I mean, this is going to be the first of four children's books. Is that right?
Yes.
Talk about how you worked together and why you decided to write a children's book specifically.
Well, my daughter would come home with a list almost every year of people that she could do a report on at school, and there was no one that looked like her, and I would scratch my head because Larry Itliong wasn't there. Now, if people are privileged enough to go to a university that has Filipino American studies, they will definitely teach you Larry Itliong, but that information is not available to everybody. I mean, just like you and many other Americans, this history has actually been completely hidden, and it's been very silent. The Filipino American community, those who knew about Larry Itliong, for some reason, this book wasn't written about him. So I called Dawn up and I sent her an email and I said, hey, listen, we need to do a children's book. I knew she was doing an adult book, her college age book about Larry Itliong. So this would kind of be an easier thing to do right before she put out her adult book. And she actually already had a contract out with a publisher for her college-aged book about Larry Itliong. And unfortunately, she just passed away. She actually passed away when we completed, this children's book. And this is the last gift that she gave to us. And so, she agreed at that point in 2016. She said, yes, let's do this book together. And, we've been working together in the community for over 20 years, and we were good friends. We brought on another good friend, Andre Sabayan, who's also the illustrator of the children's book. And we worked, the three of us, very quickly, actually. We completed this book in about a year and a half.
Wow. I'm so sorry to hear that she passed. Since you worked with her for so long, what would you like us to know about Dawn?
She was so funny. In fact, she was my comedy partner. When we were in our early 20s, she was in her PhD program and I was in college. We were, you know, we would hang out at this black box theater, a Filipino American theater in San Francisco. And then we got on the mic and, you know, we were comedic partners. But, you know, she went on to get her PhD. It's been known that she is the first Panay to get a PhD in history from Stanford University. We're both from Stockton. She's absolutely a Stockton Panay, which is a, you know, female Filipino American. And, you know, she was amazing in that she was very down to earth, and that she really looked at her history in Stockton, because growing up she didn't know about it. That inspired her. She wrote Little Manilas in the Heart about the Little Manila in Stockton and about Filipinos were segregated. And in the 20th century, Stockton was the largest population of Filipinos outside of the Philippines. And she dedicated her life. She was an activist and a historian. And, you know, if people out there who are professional historians who have gotten degrees in history, they know that usually when you're a historian, you're supposed to be unbiased and objective, and you're not supposed to be an activist within the communities that you're researching. But Dawn didn't have that luxury to not be an activist and to not push her Filipino American community that she was part of at the table where she was seated. And she absolutely was one of our leading Filipino American historians. On the week that she died, she was supposed to go to Washington, D.C. to talk about the plight of Filipino Americans at the U.S. Commission for Civil Rights.
Wow. So when did you learn, Gail, about Larry Itliong? Again, you grew up in Stockton. You're the descendant of farm workers. When did you learn about him?
I actually, you know, I did not know about him until I went to college. And So my grandfather and my whole mom's side of the family came here to the United States in the 30s, and they were farm workers. They eventually bought a farm, and we would always go to that farm growing up. My mom actually was, she was a doctor for Bayanihan House for the farm workers in Little Manila. And we actually lived in Little Manila. You know, in the part where only Filipinos could live in certain parts of time. And I not once knew about Larry Itliong. And my mom went and worked for my Bayanihan House, who people who were part of the Delano grape strike, Andy Umutang, who actually was one of the leaders in the UFW, she worked under him, and no one talked about Larry. I grew up not knowing about Larry, even being steeped within this Filipino-American history. Dawn did too, and it wasn't until we got to college did we learn about him. I went to Cal State Long Beach, and I learned about him because I took Filipino-American history classes.
Wow. It is so interesting, because we're doing a series on the history of Japanese American internment. We've done a couple of live shows, and I often ask the audience, how many of you learned about this history beyond a couple sentences in your history book? And very few hands are raised. So when you talk to other Filipino Americans, do they also tell you that they didn't learn much about their own people and, you know, people like Larry Itliong?
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. We went to Delano when we brought this book home, right? The great Delano grape strike. Larry's family is still there. And one of his grandchildren came up to us when we were there. It was in February. We had a 3-day celebration, and we actually had, tours of Delano, where 40 Acres is, which used to be the UFW headquarters, where Agbayani Village is. And we talk about this, you know, what they are all in the book. Excuse me. And then his relative comes up to us, and, you know, his great grandchild, and he says, I actually didn't know this about my grandfather.
Huh.
And that's why I'm here.
Wow.
And, you know, that's how deep it is. That is how deep that we don't know, and you have to go to college to get this information. And so there had to be a law passed in the state of California. We have a timeline here in our book that lists the, you know, just key milestones in Filipino American history and the history that relates to the farm labor movement. And it wasn't until 2013 the California legislature passed AB 123, Assembly Bill 123, that requires the teaching of Filipino contributions to the farm worker movements in public schools.
Yeah.
And in 2015, the state declares October 25th as Larry Itliong Day. Now, Rob Bonta, who was our first Filipino American legislator, actually was the person who wrote this. So if it wasn't for Rob, and Dolores Huerta actually lobbied with him and many student groups to pass AB 123. And if it wasn't for them and for that kind of movement, we still wouldn't be hearing about Larry Itliong. You know, we have this book, but because also there's that AB 123, it opens the door for us, because you can only imagine when we come into schools or we tell teachers, we tell history teachers about Larry Itliong, they're going to look at us like, are you guys sure? Have you been vetted? Is this history correct? We've never heard of him. Yes, there actually was a law passed by the state of California that Governor Brown actually signed, that says that we have to teach this, that public schools, if there is money, that they must, when you talk about Cesar Chavez, you must talk about Filipino contributions and you must talk about Larry Itliong.
Wow. And that this is just so recent that this happened. What are you hearing from Filipino American children once they learn more about their own history in school?
So this is, it's mind blowing. This is actually the first book, children's book, that is illustrated about a very specific Filipino American hero. So when we teach this to kids, and I actually went to a bunch of, just the other week I was in Seattle and I went to Seattle Public Schools and taught this in about 10 classrooms. And then I've also been to other sites where I've taught this in Delano. I've also gone to Jefferson Elementary School District, which is in Daly City. And all the kids, they actually start getting excited because it's a person who looks like them. And it's their history. In fact, when I was in Seattle, a student was telling me, my grandfather told me he was part of the strike. And my grandfather told me he was in Delano. So for students who have been born here, their parents have been born here, most likely the grandparent who was here was tied to the grape strike or was in some way tied to the farm worker movement, the farm labor movement. So it's something that they're beginning to not be ashamed of.
Wow.
It is, you know, it is something like Dawn would always say, and she would say it makes her cry, that we don't know who our Martin Luther King is. Hmm. It's as if the people in Selma didn't know what Selma was and they didn't know who Martin Luther King Jr. was. That is exactly what this book is, and that's exactly who Larry Itliong is that he is our Martin Luther King Jr. and our people don't know about him, and what a travesty that is. And we have never asked or demanded for this history to show us that we're part of this history and that we are our American history. Just like the civil rights movement, we were part of the civil rights movement, and it blows students' minds that they are in history and in media, in a book, and it's positive.
Wow.
It's an immigration story that is filled with hope and determination and dignity. And, you know, the media now, it's just painting immigrants as, you know, as those who don't contribute, as farm labor that doesn't contribute. And this shows that farm laborers, farm workers, migrant farm laborers should demand and should get respect and should be able to do their jobs in a dignified manner and not be looked down and thought of as robbing people's jobs, because that's exactly what was happening in the 60s. When we come here and we look at this book and you read this book, you get a chance to see that the same things that are happening today, same things that were happening then.
Gail Ramasanta is a Filipino-American writer and editor. She is co-author of the new children's illustrated book, Journey for Justice, The Life of Larry Itliong. Larry was a Filipino-American farm worker, activist, He played a major role in the UFW, but as we've been talking about, he doesn't get that much attention when people talk about the farm workers in the UFW. Gale grew up in Stockton, California, known to many as Little Manila, and is the descendant of farm workers. And if you have any questions for Gale, you can give us a call. Did you know about the Filipino farm workers who played a role in the Great Delano Grape Strike and other major farm worker labor movements? If your family is Filipino American, if you grew up here, what did you learn about Filipino history in the United States? This is going to be the first of four children's books. And so who are some other Filipino Americans that you would like to see highlighted, like Larry Itliong? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Gale, it was so interesting to hear you say that Larry Itliong is like your Martin Luther King, and yet so many of us have never heard of him. So luckily we have time on the show. Let's talk about Larry's life. Again, this is such a beautifully illustrated book, Journey for Justice. In the book, you write that Modesto Dule Itliong was born on October 25th, 1913, to Francisca and Artemio Itliong. Modesto, who was given the nickname Larry, was born in the Philippines in a village called San Nicolas, and he was born during typhoon season. What else can you tell us about when he was born and more about San Nicolas?
You know that he was born in San Nicolas, and he was born to a poor family of farmers. Mm. He actually, in his town, they didn't have, you know, after sixth grade, there was nowhere else to go. And, you know, we tried to recreate this in our minds when we were writing this, exactly who Larry was and how did he get the nickname Larry? And Don and I would actually laugh about this because, you know, Filipinos are known to have nicknames, you know, family nicknames that are totally not even close to, you know, what their real names are. Like, for instance, you know, my husband's name, his name is Francis, and his family calls him Chengot, which is, you know, it's a cultural thing that we laugh about. So we laugh because Modesto and Larry are, you know, kind of, you wouldn't figure that he would be a Larry. So anyway, he grows up here and he is known in the town as kind of the kid that can get things done. If you need something to happen, you ask Larry. In many drafts of this story, we tried to put that information in there and we edited it down quite a bit, but he was known as kind of, if you need help, you need anything, Larry's going to help you. And so he grows up and he's being told by his teacher, you know, throughout his whole time in elementary school, that the United States is the best country in the world. He's getting letters from his neighbor who went to the United States saying, yeah, you could come here and go to school. So he's super excited. And by the time he's 15, he has decided that he's going to America. And he has no money. And so he does what he knows, that how you can get money when you're 15. He took his allowance and he played. he actually gambled. And we actually tried to figure out how do we put this in a children's book, but we tried to put it as tactful as we could. It was just neighborhood boys playing a coin game, but he was gambling and his father actually was very upset with him. But Larry won 5,000 pesos and 12 acres of land. So you can imagine what kind of card game that was. I mean, that was a lot of money and they held to it. So he got that and his father was very upset with him and he told him, you're not going to the United States. But Larry was like, I'm going anyway. So he leaves, he says goodbye, he gets on the Empress of Asia. He is the youngest person on the Empress of Asia, big ship carrying people to the United States. He's 15. And so he lands in Seattle. And when he gets there, he is actually blown away because he meets his uncle there. And his uncle tells him he has no money. And he actually asks Larry for $5. And, you know, And these conversations that we're putting in the book were actually part of transcripts from interviews at the UFW archives with Larry, with a journalist. And so he's telling him about the first time he lands in Seattle, and he starts walking down King Street. And I was actually in King Street the other week, you know, the Chinatown there, and there was it was filled with Filipinos, Pinoys, Filipino men, and they were all waiting to get work.
And this is really interesting because, as you write, Larry expected to find something completely different because his teachers in the Philippines praised the United States as the best, most beautiful, and modern country in the world. And in American textbooks, he read that everyone had equal opportunities. Teachers even insinuated that in the U.S. you could find gold coins on the ground. So he was expecting a very different experience.
Oh, yes. And, you know, his mind is blown, I'm sure, at that point. But it's neat in that when you read this, you know, as a Filipino-American and as a, you know, the kids who are listening to the students of, you know, Filipino-American ethnicity or Filipino ethnicity, this is basically what happened to their grandparents or even their parents. You come here and you're hearing all these great things and then you're shocked because life here is so hard. And I can only imagine what my family on my mom's side of the family, you know, went through. You come here and, as young boys, they all came here, you know, as teenagers, and you are thrown in a different country and, you have to do hard labor.
Right.
To survive. And so Larry himself begins to realize very quickly that he needs to do this.
And then
he needs to.
When he was walking down the street, he met another Filipino-American who said, "We all work in canneries, restaurants, or as house cleaners or servants. If you have brown skin, you can't get any other kind of job."
Right, right. And so, and you know, and another character says that, you know, and the same character who's telling that says that he did went to University of Washington and he studied to become a lawyer, but he couldn't because he needed to work. In which Larry, when he comes over, he thinks that he's going to come here to the United States and become a lawyer. That is his dream. He wants to become an attorney. And so he hears this from a student who actually was studying to become a lawyer that, you know, there is, it's very hard to work your way up, if not impossible, because of the racism at the time.
Today, we are speaking with Gail Romasanta, a Filipino-American writer and editor. She is the author of the bilingual English and Tagalog children's book, Beautiful Eyes, and she's co-author of Journey for Justice, The Life of Larry Itliong. Larry Itliong was a Filipino-American farm worker activist, as Gail said. It's kind of the Filipino-American's version of Martin Luther King Jr., but Gail didn't learn about Larry until college, and until just a couple of years ago, children in California didn't learn about Larry. This is actually the first ever book written about Larry. Gail grew up in Stockton, California, and is the descendant of farm workers, and this is a beautiful illustrated children's book, and you can find more information about it at yourcallradio.org. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions for Gail about her book, this is going to be the first of what will be four children's books about Filipino Americans. If your family is Filipino American, who are some of the leaders in your community that you have heard about or maybe learned about later in life? And which Filipino American community leaders' stories would you like to see explored in a history book or a children's book? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with Native American historian Nick Estes about his new book, Our History is the Future. He writes about how the 2016 protest encampment at Standing Rock, initially established to stop the Dakota Access oil pipeline, became the largest indigenous protest movement in the 21st century. He explores the history of two centuries of Native resistance. I hope you can join us for that. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. Today we are speaking with Gail Romasanta, a Filipino-American writer and editor who is co-author of the new children's illustrated book, Journey for Justice, The Life of Larry Itliong. Larry was a Filipino-American longtime farm worker activist. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. This is the first ever book written about Larry Itliong. So this is a really important contribution to Filipino-American history. This will be the first of four children's books. And the other, before we move ahead to talk about Larry's life in Seattle and then what happened when he came to California, you also write about colonialism in the book. You write that the Philippines was a colony of the United States at the time when Larry was born in 1913, and schools were taught in English. If Larry tried to speak his native language, is it Ilocano?
Correct.
Okay. And the teachers punished him by hitting his hands with a ruler or worse. Can you talk about the process or maybe the conversations that you and Don had when you were, you know, trying to tackle topics like colonization and racism in a children's book?
I think that really was a conversation between edits. I would have to edit things down and we would, go back and forth over what we thought our students could and our children, our community's children, would be able to understand and take on. Originally, this was supposed to be for a younger audience, but we upped it to fourth grade. Fourth through, ninth grade. But this book is actually being taught at different universities right now also. Mm-hmm. One at UCLA, San Francisco State University, Bakersfield College, University of Michigan in the fall, UC Davis this spring. So it's getting a lot of traction at the university level, but we definitely were writing this for that kind of fourth through ninth grade. And colonialism, we're trying to figure out, wow, how can we show that? And I think one of the things was that underlining in between, you know, what a kid is understanding with the text is that a kid would understand if you're just being taught in English, and they would understand punishment if you started talking your home language in the country that you were born in, and you were getting punished for it. I mean, actually getting hit for it. Then hopefully, students could understand that idea of colonialism, whereas another country is overseeing your country. And your country is a second citizen. You're a second citizen in your own country, or seen as kind of other, even in your own birth country. Excuse me. You can't speak your language. Everything is done, you know, from the perspective of the country that's controlling yours. So it's very in simplified terms of this is what happens if you're colonized. Your lens, your perspective is that of that other countries.
It completely reminds me, Gail, of Indian boarding schools. The same thing happened to Indigenous children in the United States. And I wonder if that's even being taught today in classrooms.
I've seen that in college texts, mm-hmm. but I haven't seen that in children's texts. That would be fascinating to see, and I wonder if they maybe have a sentence or two in the books that students read, but I don't know if it's absolutely, illustrated to them like it was illustrated in this book.
Right. Well, you pack so much in to, it is what, 40, just over 40 pages, about 42 pages, but it's a very rich book. So I'm really not surprised that this is being taught in universities. I think that's fantastic because you just learn, you all did such a great job of really telling a long story and packing so much information into, it feels like a graphic novel, not so much a children's book. We actually have a question from a listener who'd like to talk about what age the book is for. Let's hear from Elena in San Francisco. Hi, Elena. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to say my godparents are Filipino. I met a boy in college and got close to his family. And so eventually converted to Catholicism, and his dad was my sponsor. So that's made me be more interested and learn about the Filipino community in the U.S., but this is all so much new information for me. I live in San Francisco now. So my one question that I have is, what age level is targeted, like what grade level for this book? I was teaching outdoor education and gardening at Sheridan Elementary in Ocean View. And so it was, for some kids, you know, it's a city school. So for some kids, it's hard to relate to that. And that's exactly what I was doing because I had taught outdoor ed. And when we got kids from the city, it was hard for them to relate to just walking in the national parks. So I went to a school and was doing after school gardening. And so one of the opportunities I had, and I only used it with the fifth graders, so this is why I'm asking the question, is because it's hard information. It's emotionally difficult. But it really helped the kids kind of break down and their facades of, you know, like being cool and uninterested. There was a film that I shared on Latin American youth in farm workers in the U.S. and the challenges they had, and so that really brought around that group. So in Ocean View, there's a lot of Filipino Americans, so I think it's a great resource. I'd love to share the book with the school, and I hope other people do that, you know, throughout the city and elsewhere.
Well, thank you, Elena. So, Gail, what would you say? What age is this book for?
So it would excuse me, fourth through ninth grade. But, you know, I've had parents tell me that they're reading this, or they just look over the pictures with their, with their 6 year olds, with, you know, kids as young as first grade. I actually read this book in a second grade class, in several second grade classes, but I pick certain portions of the book to read to them. And I definitely, you know, don't go into some of the violent details, that were happening, violent things that were happening to Filipinos, and I kind of edit that out. But schools actually invite me on, and you know, they've read the book also, so they do believe that this information is important, but definitely in an edited version. You can find, which Elena, this is a great question, you can actually find a teacher's guide, Pinoy-Pinay Educational Partnerships from San Francisco, who work within San Francisco Unified School District, actually created a beautiful, beautiful teacher's guide. They have many different versions. If you go to www.bridgedelta.com or pepsf.org, you will find the beautiful teacher's guide. They have slideshows, presentations that you can do, very quick ones if you don't have that much time. They also have like over 100-page teacher's guide that gives you resources and even more information to give your students. Then they break down lessons into one lesson on one section, to another section, you know, on a second section, another lesson on a second section. So it's also broken up if you don't have time to do everything. So there's an array of different things that you could choose from when you look at the teacher's guide. The teacher's guide is within a Google Drive, but the link is there at bridgedelta.com and also pepsf.org.
Okay, great. And I'm guessing that more teachers are listening right now because a lot of schools are on spring break. So thank you for calling in, Elena. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Gail, reading the book, I was just thinking about the similarities between what Larry went through and what so many immigrants are going through today. I mean, we were talking earlier that when Larry got on the ship from Manila to the United States, he was 15. He was the youngest passenger on the ship, and the ship took 22 days to get here. He had no idea what he would find. He landed in Seattle, Washington. You write that it was a gray, drizzly, and cold day. He'd never felt such chilly air before. And you know, we've done a lot of shows just about immigrants coming on their own, not knowing what they're about to face, how long it takes to get here. Are you bringing that into the conversation with the kids, connecting Larry's experience to what people are dealing with today?
We do. And we talk, you know, towards the end of the book, we're able to talk about what can you do to support his legacy and to support this work. And so we talk about that. And we definitely, you know, for instance, in Seattle, it was definitely, depending on the neighborhood I went to, it was a different Filipino-American population at each school site, you know, or different, you know, ethnicities at every school site. There was actually a school site that I went to that had, to me, it looked like a large a Muslim population. Many of, you know, just by looking at the students. And so we talked a little bit about what's going on today, you know, and it was right after the massacres too, the massacre in New Zealand, which is horrible. So we were able to connect on that level. This was an older class. This was fifth grade class, but even they understood. This is what was happening then. And this, you know, this is what they did. You know, to ask for their dignity and to show that, you know, we are part of America. And I say that a lot to the students, that this is American history. You can see, immigrants can see themselves in American history, and that they demanded, for their dignity and the right to have collective bargaining rights in a union. And it happened, and it happened on such a large scale in the state of California, where, you know, we are agriculture, and huge financial implications when this happened. So, you know, it together you can, and we talk about this in the classrooms.
And Larry, I mean, he was just thrown right in at such a young age. You write about him. So leaving Seattle, he heard that a farmer in Montana needed workers to harvest sugar beets. So he went to Montana, and Filipino crews were hunched over the land for hours under a relentless sun during the day and in freezing wind at night. They had no breaks. Toilets or clean drinking water. They slept in old barns. Larry's knees and back ached. You write that he sometimes worked 12 hours or more a day and had no days off. So, I mean, immediately upon arriving in the United States, he learned about how his fellow Filipino workers were, you know, working so incredibly hard and how they were treated.
Right, exactly. There was no time for a lot of reflection, I think. He was just put in there.
And then the other thing that's it's interesting and very sad. At one point, he was working on the railroad in Montana, and when he was riding the train, he realized he missed a stop. And then when the train was going full speed, he jumped off, and his right pinky finger got caught in the train door, and he had to have three fingers amputated. This is really interesting because you write that when he wrote to his dad about finding a new job, his dad basically said, you know, why don't you just come back, go to school? And he said, no, I came here of my own free will, and if I can't lick this problem by myself, then I'm no one. This is interesting because it just talks about the pressure that immigrants faced and still face to really succeed in the U.S., even if that, you know, dream, quote unquote, is not easily accessible.
Yes. And, you know, I really do feel like, you know, many of the Filipino American students can, you know, be aligned with this or feel like this is their story. And I think so many other immigrant families will be able to see their own story in this, because, you know, it happens to, I want to say, all immigrants. You come here and you have to rebuild, and that rebuilding is difficult, and you have to understand what is happening to you and the racism that, you know, that you face. My own family history is similar in that one side of my mom's family had been here since the 30s, and my dad's side of the family is in the Philippines. My mom actually was born and raised in the Philippines. And so we came here to her side of the family, And it was all the men from her side of the family. My mom is in her 80s now. And so I came here as an immigrant. I actually had to wait. She came here first. Her and my father came here first. And they were here for a year. And we were separated for a year. I was 21 days old. But she had to come at that time or her green card would have expired. And so she came. And then us kids came. And it was a different world. And, you know, this was in the 70s and there was racism. We suffered racism. You know, my sister would be spit on at school and called a stupid Chinese. You know, kids would always wonder how come I had a flat nose. And we were living in an agriculture area. We're living in Stockton. And so even then, these things were still happening and they continue on today. So, you know, many... As we wrote this, Dawn and I were absolutely intertwined with this history because we too knew this history in our own families.
How did your mom respond when she read this book?
You know, they actually, it's so cute because they were here for the whole thing. And, you know, the, actually there's writing in the book in the form of letters, and you will see them. One is my father's, Ernesto Mangawan, that his letter is my father's, and the other letter is, you know, from the neighbors, my mom's handwriting. And so we did this because we needed to get authentic handwriting from the Philippines of that time, from the 30s or maybe even the 20s. Now, my dad was born in 32, my mom was born in 35, so it's kind of close. It's about, we're missing about 10 years, but around, you know, the same kind of school system they were being raised. And so this is the kind of handwriting that would have come out. Many Filipinos have very similar handwriting if you were taught in the Philippines, very neat, or there's something, you know, consistent. And we knew that older Filipinos had a different kind of handwriting. And so they were part of this, and they loved it. And my dad would read to her. My mom, a funny story about my mom is that Dawn last year, she was at the UFW archives. She calls me and she says, "Hey, is your mom Carmen Romasanta?" And I said, "Yes, why?" She says, "There's a letter to Cesar Chavez that your mom wrote."
Wow.
And I'm like, "Get out of town." So she texts this picture to me. My mom had written a petition that all the farm workers had signed, and she had signed, and then she had also signed a letter for the farm workers to Cesar. My mom, of course, my mom is... you know, her memory isn't as good as it once was, and she doesn't remember. And so I've actually been trying to stimulate her and taking her to little Manila so that she could see maybe her old friends, and many of her friends have passed. And and so in any case, with Dawn's letter, this is, we were so surprised. My family was shocked. My siblings and I were absolutely shocked. We had no idea that my mom practiced as a doctor here in the United States.
Oh, wow.
We had no idea. My parents never talked about it. So when you talk about the Filipinos not talking about Larry Itliong, Filipinos don't even talk about their own lives as immigrants. And I don't know if it's too painful, if it's a cultural, thing that we do that we don't talk about. But we asked my dad and we're like, "Why didn't you guys tell us that mom was a doctor and that she was a doctor for... by an Ian house while we were living in Little Manila, and she's totally part of history in, you know, some way." And, you know, they just kind of smile.
Wow.
I mean, we thought she was a homemaker. We knew that she had a degree and that she was a doctor. She was, you know, she was known as a doctor in Manila. And she did not want to come to the United States because they were absolutely fine, but they're, you know, Marcos, who was the dictatorship, you know, he took over. So my dad thought, okay, it's time to go. And so they came here to the United States. And, you know, we thought that she had jobs. Like, we knew she worked for Planned Parenthood. We thought that she was a counselor. We knew that she worked at different places. You know, we thought maybe as a physician's assistant or something. We had no idea that she actually practiced for several years as a doctor in the United States. And we always knew that she told us the story that said, "You know, I never wanted anyone to raise my kids but me. So that's why I stopped working." And we thought, "Oh, okay."
Wow.
But now, and you know, we did not grow up with means or anything like that. So we scratch our head that my mom was not a doctor, and we grew up in, you know, we grew up in a neighborhood that probably, there's a neighborhood of immigrants, and we did not grow up with money, that's for sure. And we scratch our heads at the choice my mom made. And my mom is an amazing person, really ahead of her time. And this just tops it of how we view as our mom, that we didn't even know she was part of this history, the UFW history as well, that she was, her letters are in the archives. And so I have to thank Dawn for that. I would not have ever known that. And we had never known that my mom was a practicing doctor here and was the farm worker's doctor in Little Manila.
Wow. Amazing story, Gail. Gail Remasanta is a Filipino-American writer and co-author of Journey for Justice, The Life of Larry Itliong. It is a children's illustrated book about Filipino American farm worker and activist Larry Itliong. Really incredible story. I feel like, Gail, we're dealing with just so much change right now. I mean, we've had on so many immigrants who tell similar stories, that their families didn't talk about it and they didn't realize that, you know, something happened to their mom and dad until they were adults. And so it's interesting because your children are now growing up with all of this knowledge.
Right. You know, as my daughter says when I give her lectures, she's 13. So I have four kids. Mm. So I have a 13-year-old, I have a 7-year-old, and I have two 2-year-olds.
Wow.
Who are twins, who are identical twin girls. And my 13-year-old, I give her a lecture, and she always says, "Don't worry about me, Mom, I'm woke." And I'm like, okay. And the 7-year-old writes about how he likes winter because he likes to have cocoa with his family on Christmas Day and talk about our ancestors. And I'm shocked because,
wow,
on top of even talking about ancestors, that he knows what the word ancestors is and he actually knows how to spell it. So I saw this and I said, oh my God, you know how to spell ancestors?
Wow, that is amazing. Times are changing.
They are really changing. At the same time, this is still, I mean, they're lucky. I mean, we are in Stockton, but the,
right,
you know, the rest of the country, really, this kind of information, so, you know, we're doing the national tour and every community that we come to is very different. Hmm. And it really is an insight for me as to how the rest of the Filipino America, how their communities are and what they know and what they don't know about Larry Itliong, about their own history here in the United States.
So we only have a couple minutes left, and talk a little bit about, I mean, what really stood out for you the most? Larry had firsthand experience beating, he was treated, you know, horribly, whether it was in Montana. You write about him working in Alaska. He worked all over the West Coast. You have this great map, Marysville to Sacramento, Stockton, Salinas, Delano, LA. And he learned about how people were treated. When did he, what really struck you about when he realized about how, if the power of people coming together, like Filipinos joining with Mexican Americans, and the power in that kind of solidarity?
I think he really learns his lesson when he, they do the fried lettuce boycott, or they strike, right? So there's a part in the book where there's white workers at the fried lettuce company. And white workers are receiving 15 cents an hour, but they want to ask for more money. So they wanted a 10-cent raise. So they asked the Filipinos to come join them. So the Filipinos are like, okay. So they go on strike with them. And the Filipinos demand a 5-cent raise. Well, when the white workers got their raise, they went back to work. And Filipinos didn't get their raise. And then, in fact, the white workers, they found scabs to do the Filipinos' work. Scabs are those who will break the strike, and they'll come and do the jobs of the strikers. And so that is the first early lesson at a very young age for Larry, to know that you have to be united to win. We're not going to win if we're not united. And so even Ernesto Mangawan, one of the leaders that he talks to, tells them you have to treat everybody fair and you have to stay together. And so it's this lessons throughout the books that he learns, that by the time now Larry has been organizing since the 30s, right? Since the early 30s. So by the time he gets to 1965, when the Filipinos vote to go on strike, the Delano grape strike, he's already had like 3 decades in organizing. And so that's when, after the Filipinos vote to go on strike, he calls Cesar and he says, hey, can you and the Mexicans come on strike with us? And so he knows by this time it's together. They can do this. Otherwise, you know, the Filipinos aren't going to win this year. And then when the Mexicans go on strike next year, the Mexicans aren't going to strike. So together, you know, they'll have to go, because if they didn't come together, then when the Mexicans strike, then the Filipinos are going to break their strike and take their jobs.
Right.
Or if the Filipinos go on strike, then the Mexicans go, you know, it's a cycle. And so they had to do this together in order to all demand, to put all of their demands on the table.
Hmm. Well, it's an amazing book, Gail. And thank you for bringing Larry's story to light. Again, this is the first of what will be 4 children's books. Can you talk about, or just quickly give us a taste of what's coming next? Do you know yet?
So we're hoping, Dawn and I did not know who, we wanted 2 men, 2 women. We knew who the next woman would be. We really very much wanted to do Victoria Manalo Draves. She is a Filipino American diver who won 2 gold medals.
Oh, wow.
In diving. And she actually was banned from swimming in the pools in San Francisco. She was in San Francisco and she was banned from using the public schools.
Wow.
So she had to go find other pools to train in. Is that, you know, because of the racism.
Wow.
At the time, she was banned from using their pools to practice. We wanted to do her. We didn't know who the second woman was, and we thought, well, we know she had to be deceased. Dawn and I would always talk about it, and we said, we'll figure out when we get there. And I figured it out. The second one's going to be about Dawn.
Wow.
So we would like to do Vicky Manalo Draves, Dawn. We would love to do Carlos Bulacan, one of our famed, loved writers from the Filipino American community. That's what we have.
We would love to have you back, and it's beautiful that you're going to do a book about Dawn. Gail Ramasanta is a Filipino-American writer and editor. She's co-author of the children's illustrated book Journey for Justice, The Life of Larry Itliong. Larry was a Filipino-American farm worker activist. Gail, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.